Welcome back, friends. Today and for the next few episodes, Mike and I have the distinct pleasure of spending a little bit of time in Psalms 105. It's one of the narrative, or narratio, is the Latin from which the word narrative comes from, telling of the story. So we've had some Psalms that were more of a song nature, more of a praise nature in the past. Some have been more of a exhortation of morality or right living, that sort of thing. But today we get to spend a little bit of time at least looking at a part of how God has worked through salvation history, primarily in the context with Israel, but then with Jesus Christ, the application is to all of the believers who are part of him. So, do you have any opening remarks to Psalm 105 before we...
Yeah, I'm just happy to be here. Thank you so much again. And I think it's so beautiful the way it sort of... We've talked about how Psalms kind of captures the whole story of the Bible. And I think this one is really cool in how much it almost seems like a historical account, you know, where it's a reminder to the children of Israel, too, of look how far we've come or where we came from and all... just how involved God has been in all of it.
That's right. Beautiful. So, as always, I bring to your, the listeners and our friends who join us, the viable interpretations. And then, you know, Mike and I give our opinion of what we think of the scholarship. And, this particular book, has two major opinions regarding the historical setting, and by that will inform who the scholars think the author is. Mm-hmm. So the first historical setting perspective, and it tends to be the modern, let's call it the modern one. Not necessarily all moderns think this, but a goodly number of them do. So, for example, these authors, John Bergsman, Brent Petrie, will have this perspective, and Erhard Gerstenberger will also tend to this viewpoint. And what is the viewpoint? That this particular psalm was written while the children of Egypt were in exile. It's in the absence of a Davidic king, and the people of Israel so they don't have a Davidic king. It looks like the Lord has forsaken his promise that there'll always be a ruler from the line of David, and that seems to have, you know, that prophecy seems to not be working out too well. And so they will turn to earlier covenants. We recall that there are six covenants, or some scholars define the six covenants, such as Adam and Eve, where it's a couple. Noah was a family. Abraham was a tribe. Moses is a nation. David is a kingdom. And Jesus Christ is church, or really universal, all of humanity. So this psalm, since they're absent, it seems to be of a Davidic king, they're looking at covenants and thus the historical narration of Moses and Abraham. So that's one set, that this is from the perspective of the exile, that would be 72 to 540 BC. We certainly know it's book four of the Psalms. Those are 90 to 106. That's not a doubt. The second alternative is the one, if I was going to have an opinion, It's the one I have, and it's certainly the one earlier church fathers would have had. And that is that it was written around 1000 BC. It was written during the reign of King David. And it's because of what appears to be pretty clear words from the psalm itself, that this psalm was composed for King David, especially verses 1 through 15. And so if we compare that with 1 Chronicles 16:7, and that's very fair to do. 1 Chronicles and 1 Kings shed light one to another. Mm-hmm. And so we look in 1 Chronicles. Then on that day, David delivered first this psalm to thank the Lord into the hand of Asaph and his brethren. So this psalm is when the ark is going for Obadiah's house back into Jerusalem proper. Such a song was suitable for the occasion, for it describes the movement of the Lord's people and his guardian care over them in every place, and all this on account of the covenant of which the ark then removing was a symbol. And yes, that's very true. The ark was a symbol of that. Our last psalm sang the opening chapters of Genesis, and this takes up its closing chapters and conducts us into Exodus and Numbers. And I have access to scholarship where that comes from. So the first 15 verses of Psalm 105 are also found in 1 Chronicles 16:8-22 and presented there as a composition of David, written and sung for the bringing up of the Ark of the Covenant into Jerusalem. We can therefore conclude that though this psalm is not here specifically attributed to King David, he is the author of it, and it's well worth a comparison reading, and indeed it is. Just as an aside note, if one takes up the worthy task of reading 1st and 2nd Chronicles, it's a retelling of history of God's people from a more optimistic view, intending to encourage the people of Judah in their task of rebuilding and restoring national life in the post-exilic period, you know, post-exilic after they come back from Babylon. You know, there is no temple.
Probably felt pretty hopeless.
It did. Yes. Yeah. Yes. This is more of an encouragement. So both patristic and modern scholarship do not, so they both will say we do not know the author, but it's from speculation on the text or not before the scholars that lead one to the other. So that's a brief summary of the two camps of the scholarship.
Yeah, awesome.
Alrighty.
I always so appreciate your depth of knowledge when it comes to the actual construction of it. Because it's easy for me to just read it as it is and not even think about the authorship and whatnot. So.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And I hope it helps. And mostly I hope it helps our friends who join us on these journeys of delight and wonderment, mm-hmm. to sometimes put their gifting of the Spirit, their own scholarship and ability to start to think through and just not always go by who says something. I mean, right. I hate to say it that way because, you know, an office or a title or a note, you would hope notoriety serves as an indication, but sometimes it doesn't, right? Sometimes, and it doesn't mean we have to always like everything they say all of the time. I know there's right. one scholar I found, and all right, we have a little bit of a time for a tangent because we'll go into the Naracho in the next episode. So a brief tangent. I like his scholarship a lot, a lot. But, and this is coming up with another body of work I'm involved in. He has a different interpretation on the word tithe. And do I then throw out all the other part that I like, or do I try and enter into his mind? And it's more than just his point of view. It's also his experience.
Right.
With those who misappropriated that term from a leadership perspective. And so I don't necessarily agree with his conclusion, but I do appreciate his honesty and reasoning process that got him to that conclusion.
Yeah, and I think that's something that's really important for people to remember, to not throw the baby out with the bathwater if they find one thing they disagree with, you know, or just to not forget the value of doing your own research and kind of discovering what your own interpretation might be, you know, because I think sometimes we feel like we all have to agree on everything, and that would make everything so much more boring, I feel, you know, if we were all just the exact same mind or perspective, and our experiences are so unique and individual that it feels sort of impossible to have complete agreement on everything. And I think we forget that it's most important to agree on the core of like the gospel message, you know, where we're sinners in need of a savior. And apart from that, there's so much grace, you know, I think there's so much more grace than we allow room for a lot of times as humans.
That's right. All right, my friends, let us pick up with the, as we promised, the narration of Psalm 105 in the next episode. Till then, my friends, fide Sriracha.